Before we get started, I've got to tell you about three great companies. PickClick is the first. It's a one-person startup from my friend Ryan in San Diego. PickClick gives you a visual way to search eBay, Etsy, and other sites. Ryan is already doing 1 million product sales per month on PickClick.com. Not hits, but sales. Go to PICCLICK.com to see how he's doing it. 99 Designs, it's the largest crowdsourced marketplace for graphic design. When I used them, I wrote a description of the design I needed and how much I wanted to pay. I got a bunch of designs back. I gave each designer feedback. I picked the one I liked best, and that's the only one that I paid for. Try them for logo design. If you need a blog designed, use them. If you need app icons, use them. There's so many different reasons why you might want to use them. Check out 99 Designs, and you'll see why so many past Mixergy guests have used 99designs.com. And Grasshopper. I've had them now as my longest sponsor for a reason. Not only does my audience love them, but you might have heard several guests here on Mixergy say that they use grasshopper.com as a result of these messages, and they love it. It's the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs like me love because it offers us multiple extensions, music on hold, call forwarding. It gives an impression of having a big professional organization, but also caters to your need to travel and to be flexible. Check out grasshopper.com. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. You guys know what we do here. Every day I interview a different entrepreneur about how she built her business, how she launched it, how she evolved it, what she learned along the way, and we hopefully bring back those ideas to my audience who will go out there and build incredible companies and then come back to Mixergy and let me interview them about how they built their businesses. Today's guest is Fran Meyer. She is the co-founder of Match.com, one of the most recognized brands in online personals. Today, she's the president and founder of Trustee, a leading internet privacy service provider. And Fran, welcome to Mixergy.
How fun. Thank you.
So it's been over 10 years since you guys sold Match.com, but it's still a big name and it's still attached to your biography. How much of an impact has it had on your reputation and your career?
Well, you know, it was wonderful to be part of the early internet days here in San Francisco. And Match.com was just around the corner from Wired and in South Park. And it was a great bit of fun. I actually joined in late 1994. And honestly, at that point in time, there really wasn't online dating, as certainly not as we know it now. And to build a brand during that time, and a lot of brands that were born in the 95 through 98 time period, are still around and still really doing some great stuff.
Absolutely.
eBay, for example. Yeah.
I mean, they were pioneers back then who were really innovating and coming out with ideas. I was reading articles about Match.com from back then, and you could see that people in the matchmaking business were scared even back then. And then people in related industries were scared of how they were just going to be pushed out of the market because of Match.com. It was so interesting to go back in time and read what was happening and what people thought as the business and the world was changing.
Oh, I bet. I mean, honestly, back then, the primary way on personals was 900 number personals, which was very sketchy and very sleazy. And, you know, we learned a lot about that. Then there were the high-end dating services, but expensive and involved and so on. So what we did with Match was really create a whole new category. Unfortunately, we didn't know it then, that we were creating not just a whole new category called online dating, but pretty much a rite of passage for most singles nowadays. And it's been transformational, not just in terms of internet services, but really into people's lives. For example, people, I think, date more, just plain old date more than maybe they did prior to Match.com and the online dating, which means that they're meeting more people. They're maybe meeting other people through those people. They have opportunity to be more selective. And I think it's a good thing. And we knew it was a good thing right away. The sad story is Match was the second child of a company called Electric Classifieds. And we were not really, the board and the leaders of Electric Classified were all about the classified marketplace. And so they kind of didn't really understand that Match was creating a whole new category, a whole new business model, and would be the brand that it is today. So unfortunately, it was sold relatively inexpensively. I think it was 1998 to Sendit, who flipped it over for probably 10 times as much a year later to Barry Diller's organization.
Let's go back in time and just hear how the business evolved and learn what happened along the way. So you mentioned that you came in 1994. The concept came to a guy named Gary Kremen, he says, in his shower in 1993. Can you take this story from there?
Yeah, I went to Stanford Business School with Gary, and he's a crazy guy, a very lovable guy. And, you know, 94 was pretty, 93, 94 was very early. Back in 94, frankly, I was at AAA, and I was running membership marketing for California's AAA Club. And got my first email account, got my first access to the internet, and I was like, oh my God, this is going to change everything. Ooh, sorry about that. And met up with Gary at our business school reunion, and I had done marketing at Clorox prior, and he was looking for somebody who kind of knew one-to-one marketing, who knew how to market to on a gender basis, so marketing to women or marketing to men. And wanted somebody to make Match.com sort of the proof of concept for online classifieds. So to that extent, I really took the ball with Match. I left my AAA job. At the time, honestly, I didn't know very much about stock options or what this internet thing was going to be. I kind of did it because, well, why not? This thing is going to be great. So, you know, at the time, it wasn't even really about the money or about any of that kind of thing. And immediately, so I joined late 1994. By early 1995, by Valentine's Day, we had a very rudimentary Match.com online. We knew a few things at that point. One is we were going to market to women, and that we felt comfortable the men would know that that was a good idea and they would follow. We were going to try and have real success in the Bay Area, where there was a lot of activity having to go on with the internet. So we felt that that was, you know, let's get some critical mass. So we did a bunch of parties and movie events and things like that. And we knew that for people to get matches, we weren't going to start with 20 questions. We were going to start with a few critical questions. And nowadays, there's no way you could enter into start a new matchmaking service without asking 101 questions, really. And, you know, we learned some things, too. For example, marketing to women doesn't mean that you're just selling the service to women or a half pink and purple color scheme. It means that, you know, we had an online dating safety person. And we didn't ask, you know, all my engineers were guys. And they said, well, we're going to match on weight. So what are the weight categories? You know, numbers, right? And I said, no way, man. Let's use body type, because if you're really, you know, that's a better way to go. So from the very beginning, we were ahead of the marketplace. We also focused on press. And by virtue of getting press, you know, February of 1995, we basically were always the market leader and never really looked back.
All right, I've got a lot of notes here on what you said. I want to dig deeper into it. I want to find out about press. I want to find out about how I love using body type instead of weight. I want to find out about some of those decisions. But let's go back to how the two of you met. You were at Stanford Business School together. What was your relationship before you started working together?
Friendly, of course. I remember meeting Gary. I'm sure he remembers this too. One of the orientation activities we had at Stanford, and this is, God, going back to, 1987, we had an orientation scavenger hunt around San Francisco, and Gary was on my team, and it sounds like you know Gary. Gary talked a mile a minute and was both exasperating and brilliant. And, you know, it's funny because Gary is a kind of an eccentric guy, but he's always been a warm and good friend. But I remember when I decided to jump my stable job to go to Match.com, I certainly had my husband's buy-in, but I didn't tell too many of my girlfriends because I was afraid, from business school, I was afraid they'd kind of say, no, you've got to be kidding. I didn't want to hear it. I wanted to go ahead and do it.
Kidding why?
Because Gary's a wild man.
I see. Oh, really? Can you give me a little...
What's this internet thing? And, you know, all the really good reasons of why people shouldn't take a flyer. And I had, at the time, my youngest son was not even a year old, or just about a year old, yeah.
Can you give me an example, maybe a story that shows why people thought that he was a wild man?
Oh, gosh, you know, well, he's got chutzpah. So, for example, I remember I was hiring a PR agency. And Gary, first thing he said to them is, how much are you going to pay us to do our PR? Okay? Now, you know, one thing I like about Gary is he thinks big. And so, you know, obviously that wasn't the answer that they wanted to hear, but it kind of pointed out where he was coming from and was kind of aggressive.
And beyond...
And I wanted the job. So I recall, too... sorry for interrupting, that I just start showing up at the offices, and one night I brought pizza, you know, and or Chinese food, I think. And that was the kind of way you kind of ingratiate yourself, especially with a bunch of men.
So you just liked the concept so much, before you agreed that you were going to be working together, you just stopped by the office, you'd bring pizza, you'd take an interest, I see. And then it finally just made sense for the two of you to work together, the group of you. At that point, there are a few other people working on Match.
Yeah,
right?
But probably, you know, 6 or 7.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you raise money before or after you joined?
Gary had raised the first round. And while I was there and, you know, during that time period, we probably went through 4 CEOs. We raised another couple of rounds. Most of the rounds were from firms and VCs who wanted to get into the classified market. So honestly, they were not so enamored with Match.com. It seemed, you know, not that attractive to them. Partially, who knew? We were too early. The idea of community on the internet was not well established. The idea of brand on the internet was not well established.
I see. And you don't need really a brand name for classifieds. It can fit in with other. I think I read an old article about how electronic classifieds would partner up with newspapers instead of.
Right. The idea was to be the back end. But yeah. As we know, a couple of things, you know, hindsight's perfect, is that newspapers were very slow to figure out what they were going to do. And they didn't really embrace the internet for the classified business very quickly. And then, of course, their opportunity to do so was somewhat limited by the time Craigslist and eBay came on the scene.
By the time what? Oh, right.
Which disintermediated the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, when's the last time you went to a Brussels? I mean, I'm sorry, a classified advertising in a newspaper. You just don't do it anymore.
Never. I don't remember ever doing
right.
it.
And you weren't doing it by the time it probably got to 2000. So the market was moving very, very quickly.
And what was the perception of dating, of personals in general back then?
Personals especially, very sleazy, sketchy, mm-hmm. potentially unsafe. We knew that newspapers might put in 900 number ads suggesting that a woman was interested in multiple partners or other activities that, you know, let's not go into, just to generate 900 number phone number responses.
I still see that today.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right.
But if you're, you know, and it's all very interesting, too, because it was real insight into the way people, what people want and how they go about it. So, for example, I talked about some of the first few questions. Of course, they were gender and age and what you do for a living kind of, and really height, body type. What we really learned, I think the first few questions we added back or added in were your interest in children. And we should have known right away that that would have been a really important question, but it was a fundamentally important question. So we had to ask questions about whether or not you have children, want children, or if your children are grown. Which kind of was a clue to us too, that people were pretty serious about using this, not just to date, but for long-term relationships.
I see. How then do you bring women into an environment like this that had such a bad reputation that was associated back then with those 900 ads?
Right. So we did a number of things. First of all, we didn't call it personals. We called it online dating.
Okay.
Okay, so very important. We were ahead of the curve, I think, in terms of addressing concerns that women would have. So, for example, it was anonymous. It still is anonymous. It's probably important that dating sites remain anonymous and for the protection of women. We try to use, try to make it a well-lit place. So I remember the three words that we put around the brand positioning. They were safe, anonymous, and fun. And we thought the safety one was really important. Anonymous, of course, just so you sort of reinforce that. And fun, like come on in and see what happens.
And by anonymous, how do you keep people's anonymity?
Well, they had to select a handle. Now, did people really use a real name? They might have.
I see.
Hard to know.
And you targeted the Bay Area at first. You talked about organizing parties and events. Of all of those different things, what worked best for bringing people from the Bay Area in?
You know, probably the BC community, the internet community. There were so many parties and things like that going on, and everything was so exciting. It was really tremendous. And so I would say, in the end, it became word of mouth, you know.
And just sponsoring parties where the VCs and the people in the tech industry were going.
Or just by going to those parties and passing out cards. And then, of course, press. Getting press was really important.
And how did you do that?
It was a fun press story. Oh, at the very beginning, it was the novelty of it all. I think the focus on women was kind of interesting. So I remember I got an op-ed in the Washington Post for targeting women online, forming partnerships. So we had some early partnerships. In fact, that was another way we tried to get community. So we did a partnership with Women's Wire, which later became women.com, and with Excite at Home, and with, or maybe who knows what it was called then. I can't remember. But we had so many partnerships, and that sort of brought legitimacy too. So if a global network navigator, if you recall that, you're probably too young, would partner with with Match.com, that would be a good thing. Probably in 1997, I got Match.com was probably one of the first trustee seal holders, because anything I could do to reinforce trust was something I did.
And the partnerships, like the one that you had with the company that became Women.com, what were they like? What was the structure of the partnership?
So they were early affiliate partnerships. We just didn't have the name for that then. So basically, we would create a co-branded Match.com experience that would take branding elements from the other partner website, and they would introduce it to their membership. And then later, once we started charging, we'd pay back a revenue share based on the traffic that they delivered. And we'd recognize that you came from that, so that they're consumers. So the emails might say, thank you from Women's Wire for joining the Match.com community. What was cool is nobody wanted their, well, I think Yahoo wanted their own community. And there's a story there. And but most got that critical mass was the way to get critical mass was not to have your own close community, but to bring your membership with everybody else's.
Right.
So my story with Jerry Yang, and he probably doesn't remember me or that, was we were at a conference and I was pitching, do a partnership with us. We'll really, you know, Yahoo was growing very fast. We'll really do something special for you guys. And he tells me, we will never charge for anything on Yahoo. And at that point, we had one of the very first payment models on the internet, which was pretty cool. At the time, I think it was just us and Wall Street Journal, of any significance anyway.
How did you decide to charge? This was, you launched 95, in 96 you went paid. How did you make that decision?
Well, we waited first until we thought we had a critical mass in some key cities. And if my memory is correct, we had about 65,000 people on Match.com. Sounds very small right now, I know, but at the time it was big. And I know that we had it in San Francisco, New York, a few big cities that we felt there was enough people. We also believe that by charging, we'd qualify the daters more. And that was immediately evident. As soon as we started charging, the percentage of women went up from, let's say, if I recall, 10% to almost 20%.
Oh, wow.
Because that qualified the guys.
Because they knew that the guys who were paying weren't just hanging out, weren't just breezing. I see. They were making an investment in the relationship.
Right. Paying also helped with the distribution relationships, because why have an affiliate partnership if you're not going to get paid?
I see.
And it was cheap. I don't know how much they charge now, but I remember it was, I think, $3.99 a month. The other thing that we learned very quickly was bundling really improved results in a very big way.
How do you mean?
Oh, by the way, one of the marketing things we did is we did search engine optimization and a lot of email. So it's funny because now I'm in, trustee, and we do, privacy, right? And for sure I was a spammer. Absolutely. My team spammed.
How do you mean? Tell me.
Oh, we would just send emails. We try and find email lists and just send them. Now, to be fair, if somebody opted out, we did honor opt-outs. And I'm not sure we did anything that is not completely, there weren't the tools there are now to do online marketing. I mean, I look at the way we do online marketing now at Trustee compared to what I thought was probably the most sophisticated online marketing approach at Match back in 1997. And you're talking completely different worlds now.
It's true. And also, standards change. What was considered spam,
exactly.
What's considered spam today wasn't necessarily considered spam back then. And back then, we weren't sure what was going to be what.
Exactly. And some of the things that we're doing didn't even have names. So, for example, Amazon got famous for the affiliate model, but we were doing it before. And Hotmail got famous for the viral stuff by putting in the footer, get a Hotmail account. Well, of course we were doing that at Match.
How did you guys do that at Match?
Well, same thing, in the footer of the email.
I was emailing another member, then in the footer it would say that? I see, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So,
And did we talk about bundling? You mentioned it, and I think
we
didn't get to cover that.
So what we learned is, for example, I did a partnership with, I think it was called the Net Magazine. Mm-hmm. So if a customer of Match wanted to sign up for a 6-month subscription at probably, $15, who knows, they'd get a free subscription to the Net Magazine. Had nothing to do with dating, right? But what the heck? And immediately you'd see people would take advantage of that offer.
I see that because you're giving them something else, they're more likely to join.
Right.
And were you getting paid by the magazine to do that?
No, they were getting, I guess they were getting names or subscriptions, or maybe I gave them a little bit. I can't recall.
Okay.
Can't remember. A long time ago.
I do remember the affiliate program being really big back then. You guys were, because you were charging, you were able to go out and pay for affiliates. How'd you find affiliates?
I had business development just like every other internet company, and would go out and see who had communities, basically, mm-hmm. and see if it could work in with them.
Where did the idea for an affiliate program come from? Of course, affiliate program is where you say anyone who sends me a new customer will get a share of the revenue I make from that customer. So
I would have to credit that to Gary.
Okay.
And then Gary would look at me, and at the time I'm like, product manager and never really had biz dev, and he'd say, well, this is part of your job. It's like, okay, fine. And over the years, I still like to do a lot of business development. I like to make deals.
At the time, there was another company called One and Only that was also out there soliciting affiliates. When did they come on? Did they come on before or after you guys?
I have no memory of One and Only other than I remember there was a company or a person called Rosalind Resnick, who later went on to run an email company and did really well. But she was NetGirl on AOL, and she wanted to do AOL was getting off its paying forum leaders, and she was making a lot of money. She had a nice environment going on there. She was making good money, and so she wanted to start her own dating service and leverage her reputation from AOL. So she kept on telling us how she was going to beat us, and never happened. The funny thing is she one time sent an email, or her company one time sent an email to all her testers or beta members or whatever, and they didn't suppress the email address. Okay? So no anonymity. And I took advantage of that because, of course, we were signed up because we were watching the competition. And Match.com then sent an email to all those people whose anonymity was what was threatened and said, well, this wouldn't happen at Match. Now, it's kind of ironic, though, because Rosalind, and she was very angry at me, Rosalind went on to start an email company. So there you go.
Yeah, that's what she became really big for, and for fighting spammers and for creating a double opt-in email list. I think they invented double opt-in. Did you guys ever talk again after that? Did you do any work together?
Well, we had we were at a Net Girls meeting in New York, and she was very aggressive and angry at me, and that was interesting. And then later, of course, we got together. I hired somebody who worked for her, so we connected over a reference check, and it was fun.
I see. Do you remember who that person was?
Colin O'Malley.
Ah, I remember Colin vaguely. Rosalind's a good friend. I remember her from back in the day.
Oh, okay. So does this surprise you?
No, I actually don't remember her being in the dating business at all, but I know your company, and I know her, and I know that you guys weren't just going to stand down and wait for something to happen. I remember you guys were out there building, and you were fighting hard.
Right.
I admire that a lot.
Yeah, it was fun.
How was it? Was Yahoo in the business before you guys sold, in the personals business? No.
No. I don't know that they got into it for a while later. And, of course, they quickly went to a number two position.
I see. Was there any pushback when you started charging?
Yeah, but you know, we still had a free registration, so you could, or a free trial period. So it's not as if you couldn't try it, and that was important. I'm not sure what the rules are now. We did find that we were, if you did a demographic slice, we were more likely to get subscribers for a man over 29 and for a woman over 26, if I recall. There seemed to be a much higher propensity to pay once you were a little bit more into your 20s.
I see.
Which, you know, think about it, makes sense.
Right. You got to 65,000 users before you started charging. Once you started charging, how did your growth rate get impacted?
You know, it still kept on growing. It really didn't slow
down. Faster? Same?
I'm sorry?
Did it go faster? Did it stay consistent?
You know, we were growing very quickly all the way through. Now, of course, the internet was growing very quickly, and we were a big part of that. So it's hard to know exactly, and I'd have to go look at papers to try and figure that out.
Okay. You also said that you were one of the first.
We got to over a million, you know, not that long after. So
we went paid 96, maybe by 97 you hit your first million?
No, we went paid in 95. And by the time we sold in 98, there was a very large database. So
I see. Oh, did you go paid in 95, not 96?
Yeah. Oh, maybe you're right. Okay, sorry, 96. Yeah.
Okay. SEO, what kind of search engine optimization did you do back then?
No, we didn't do any.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. I thought you were getting some traffic from search engines.
Oh, I'm sure we were, but the idea of search engine optimization? No.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't think it was until the year 2000 or so when that became big.
Yeah. Probably with Google and some of the analytics. No, I mean, again, I have a much more sophisticated online marketing department now at Trustee, and I'm amazed how different it is.
Let's keep talking about Match, and then I want to ask you about Trustee, and I also want to be fair with your time because I know you've got to catch a flight. Let's see what else there is here. The sale. The sale wasn't of the whole business. It was just of Match.com, right?
Yeah.
Can you say how much it was for?
Less than 10 million.
Less than 10 and over 6 million is what I saw in different press reports.
Yeah, that was right. Yeah. It wasn't enough.
It wasn't. How was that decision made internally?
Again, at that point, the focus of the investors and the board was on not on online dating, but on classified market. And we sold in late 97. There was a little bit of a downturn, believe it or not. It was a poor decision, although I think that team was not committed enough to the brand or the community to have made it successful. So even then, even though we were paid and we were, well, I'll tell you the truth, Match.com in 1997 was profitable. Wow. Now, that sounds good, but actually that's idiotic. We should have been spending a hell of a lot of more money and investment in database and cross-marketing and relationships and advertising. But the mindset was that it was a cash cow for the rest of the operation. So I look at that and, my teenage boy, a couple of Valentine's Day ago, was watching me watch a Match.com commercial on TV. And he says to his friend, "Oh no, Mom's going to get all bummed out now." Because, look, so here's the deal. We sold it for too little. We didn't invest enough in the business before we sold it. It was still growing. It was making money. It was a brand leader. It was changing the way people were doing things online. And we sold it for less than $10 million. And I got out of that virtually no cash. But I'll take responsibility that I probably could have put together the investor group and taken it over myself. Mm. Frankly, I was exhausted. I was beat up, almost every day for Match.com within the company, because the rest of the company and the management team was all about the classifieds. And so I was not getting the support. I was always having to fight for money and technology and other resources. I had two small children, and I let it go.
Was it also the investors who were pushing, or was it?
Oh, no, it was the investors.
Gary too at the time. He was pushing.
Yeah, Gary was out of it, and Gary probably encouraged me to try and either go with him or go with somebody else and do it myself. And again, my children were very small. I was very tired. I certainly had no insight into how the internet would be, and I let it go. Wow. And I even turned down the job to go with it with Sendint, partially because at the time they were going to move it to Connecticut, and I didn't want to do that. So I look back at that, and it was a learning opportunity for sure.
I see it actually in your face as you're describing it. It's painful to look back on.
Sorry. Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did that impact the rest of your career, that decision?
I'm sure in ways I couldn't even really recount. Mm-hmm. But, Andrew, as you said at the beginning, I established a reputation at that point, certainly established a lot of relationships with a number of different movers and shakers across the valley. I definitely was credited with building that brand, which is, not just the affiliates or, which is everything, the look and feel, the value proposition, the targeting, and all of that. So I was very employable. So by the time it got to 1998, early 98, I had a number of different job offers, or certainly opportunities I could have pursued. Now, I'm not sure I made the right choice. I went with Women.com, who I mentioned earlier. I turned down eBay. Partially, it was too long of a commute, and I wasn't necessarily going to be VP. I look back at that now and think that was sort of silly. I probably could have looked around and done some more things too, but didn't. And Women.com was great. It was just not as big as a success as I would have liked it to have been.
Why not?
I don't think we had collectively as a management team a clear enough sense of being a media company and what that meant, versus being a community like iVillage, versus being a technology company. And without having a clear sense of what our purpose was and what kind of company we were, it led to not executing as well as I think we otherwise could have.
So were
and
you
then,
going-
of course, as you know, and this is true with Match as well as anything else, timing is everything. Had we held on to Match even another 6 months, probably would have gotten a heck of a lot of more money and maybe have thought differently about it. Women.com went public in 1999, but late 99. So by the time of the shares rally, the lockout, it was .com bust.
Mm.
So, right. You know, timing is everything.
Wow. Why didn't you start another company? Why didn't you launch a company after that?
I felt I needed some more experience and felt I could add to other teams just as well.
Okay.
I didn't quite found my own company actually till 2008.
With a trustee.
With trustees conversion, yeah. Which was sort of like do-over.
Speaking of, Match.com, the company was already there. The idea for the site was there. And I think you said you'd gone through several CEOs, but you're still considered a founder of the company.
Oh, no. At the time, there was only the initial seed investment.
Okay, so there wasn't a CEO.
There was Gary.
Okay.
Right. So Gary and I were, and in terms of Match, while there were some other things developed, Match really wasn't developed.
What do you mean? Oh, I see. Okay. So Match wasn't as a site developed, but the idea that they hoped would become jobs.com and housing.com and all the classified.
Yeah. The classified strategy was in space and it was in place to some degree. Match.com in terms of a site, a brand and so on was really not in place until I got there.
And you didn't get to cash out from that because you didn't have shares or why?
No, the preferences were really not such that anybody really got much money. I did, I got some bonuses for helping sell it. I got some bonuses for helping to transition it. So, yeah, you know, I've had a bunch of singles, but it's less about the money. It's more about, man, I should have taken it farther along.
I see. JB in the audience agrees with me that Match.com was a great name. How did you guys get the name Match.com?
You know, I have to then credit Gary. Gary bought all kinds of names.
Oh, really?
And so you'll have to talk to Gary, but he's most famous for sex.com and his fight for getting it back from a squatter.
He might be due to come here to Mixergy. Jang is incredible. I don't know how she meets all these people. She's the one who introduced me to you, and I think she's hooking up an interview with him probably next month.
Oh, I'll be happy to introduce it to.
I'm sorry?
I'll be happy to introduce
him. I'd love it. Are you guys still friends? It looks like you're
of
still
course,
close.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Trustee. What was Trustee when you signed on?
So, .com bust, 2001, I had spent about a year at BlueLight.com, which was Kmart and Yahoo and SoftBank. And things were just kind of falling apart, especially with Kmart and Martha Stewart, long story. Anyway, so I was looking at the next thing to do. There were not a lot of jobs. I wanted the top job. And I knew some of the board members because at Match, we were one of the first trustee sale holders, one of the first clients, again, to reinforce trust. And they invited me, so I was close to a couple of the board members, friendly, and they invited me to join in. And frankly, so I joined in August of 2001. I don't think the board understood how bad things had gotten. So they had, my predecessor hadn't been there for 6 or 7 months. One of the board members was trying to run it, and things were falling apart very quickly. I joined it basically because it was a job, but the board did not even have a good sense of what the financials were or some of the basics. My first board meeting was supposed to be on September 11, 2001. Of course, we didn't have it that day. But a couple of days later, my message to the board was, I wasn't sure if we were going to make it through the year. Wow. That as far as I could tell, we had maybe a 30% renewal rate. That our backlog of certifications was through the roof, but we still had to cut staff from 23 to about 14. That I was going to hire a new head of sales and a controller, just so we could start to find the money. And I suggested that that if they could do anything, I'd appreciate their help. And that was, I think, for the first 6 months of Trustee, when I took over, it was really survival mode, a lot of triage. It was determining who, you know, doing everything from telling the marketing guy not to focus on policy, but to focus on helping sales. And helping sales really focus on large clients, because if we start with small clients, there's no, we'd never be able to get ahead of the curve. And go ahead.
No, I'm here to hear from you. So you go ahead and then I'll come back with the questions.
So, but by the time end of 2002, we were seeing some revenue growth. We were seeing some renewals come back. We had, I think, increased prices. We had fixed some of the worst technology issues that we had. And I recognized that we had a brand. So we started looking at things like, what could we do in the email space? And what other kinds of partnerships could we do? And it started to grow pretty rapidly, organically, such that by the time we got to 2005, I think Trustee was, you know, $4 million. And that's without any, when I took it over, in terms of paid revenue for the certification, it was less than $1 million.
And that's where the revenue came from charging companies to certify that they had the proper privacy policies, the proper opt-out policies, and to overall make sure that the consumer was protected. And you were charging the company, and they were charging the companies for this certification. When you say that 30% that you guys had a 30% renewal rate, that means that only 30% of the people who were paying came back to pay again the next year, which is horrible. And then
right.
A backlog of certification might
now,
even
some
be
some of those
worse.
Companies might have gone out of business because it was dot-com bust.
I see. Okay.
Right. So consider now, or the recession, or the big recession. My view is in the Bay Area, the dot-com bust was worse than this past recession. Maybe it's more like what this past recession is in New York or something like that. So yeah, no. So some of the companies might have just gone out of business. It was impossible to know. But things were pretty pitiful.
In some ways, that's even worse because it means you can't do anything better to go and regain their business because there is no business to regain.
Right. So it was really a focus on strengthening the brand, making sure that companies knew we were serious about turning around. I remember seeing Disney, and Disney wasn't sure of the value. And they told me that my team was inconsistent and rude and they, you know, and I asked them, I said, I'm really hearing you and I really want you to stay with us and I will address this. But if I don't, I completely understand. And Disney remains a customer.
Oh, wow. How do you give them value? What's the value that they get for having that seal on their site?
Yeah. So Disney is a very large, well-established, and I'd say just like Apple, very trusted brand, right? I mean, And they understand that brand trust is a very important part of their value. So I think Trustee brings the equities of privacy that you might not have with the Disney brand. Most of our companies say that they enjoy that, plus the benefits of feeling like they're one of the leaders in terms of privacy or that they're compliant with certain regulations. So I believe Disney has our children's online privacy protection safe harbor, and they may actually have our EU safe harbor. So those kinds of things are important to large companies. Small companies will see the benefit, especially, but large brands as well, especially transactional brands, in terms of a lift in registrations or transactions or better information.
You're able to show, well, actually, before I get to showing conversion rate increase, the Disney brand isn't enough for parents to just trust? Are parents even familiar, or are consumers familiar with the Trustee brand enough to understand what kind of protections they get from it? How do you know?
No, I think in general ways they are. They know it's about personal information. We know that if they put, if commerce companies put Trustee next to a security seal, that consumers know the difference, roughly. And yeah, of course people trust Disney, but it's an added level of assurance. And again, the large companies probably are interested in bringing that equity in. I'm not sure they're measuring the impact of Trustee on their programs directly, But they've told me that they feel that it's another important way to assure the consumer.
Do you have any data to show increase in conversion rate or awareness in the consumer market?
We have, it's interesting. So one of the things that happened when we went for profit is that we were able to build in technology and build in some relationships. And so now we can do A/B testing. In fact, we use a third party just because that way our customers will recognize that you don't have to trust us, trust this third party, and they're expert in this. And we have a number of companies that some of the numbers are so high we don't even want to publicize because people might believe they're not real. So typically we see increases from, if you're a small company, there's a company called Deb and Rue that saw a 30% increase in sales. There's other companies called Pro Sports that went up quite a bit. KitchenAid, a well-established brand on Shop KitchenAid, went up something like 7%.
Just for having that seal that many of us see and are familiar with, but maybe we don't pay as much attention to.
Right, and we do, it's essentially through an A/B test.
I see, and you can tell that way. Wow.
Yeah.
Going for profit. When we say that you're the founder of Trustee, you're the founder of the new for-profit Trustee as a business, true?
Yes, that's true.
So you guys raised $10.5 million from Excel Partners. What made you decide to go for profit?
So Trustee was doing very well, and every year we were growing and growing, and we were getting involved in more issues. So I mentioned earlier that we were getting involved in email and spam. In 2005, we had started to look at approaches to downloadable software and spyware. And we were also seeing some competition from a company called ScanAlert. They were known for their sale, HackerSafe, which is now part of McAfee Secure. And they were really going after the small business market very effectively with a much shorter sales cycle, a much quicker time to certify, and something that was generating those positive returns for the companies that had that seal. So it was a combination of knowing that this was happening in the marketplace and that Trustee really needed, I felt, to address those markets. Now, nonprofit board, mostly lawyers, somewhat reluctant to go there. And so it took a long while. I would say I started the discussions in 2005,
wow.
And it didn't happen until, we didn't close around until 2008. What happened in 2007 is I got the board to understand that for the best impact, and impact is what nonprofit boards should be going after, that for the best impact, we had to be able to go after the small business market, that we would be marginalized if we were just with the large companies. And without technology, without scanning, without product, there was no way we could address effectively and scalable, in a way that's scalable, the small business market.
Because the way you work with the big market, with the big customers, is with a lot of human work.
It was all men.
All men.
In fact,
oh, wow.
When I was raising money, I had, at the time, one sysadmin on the Trustee team.
Wow. Wow.
Okay. Now, in the past, I might have had a couple of guys, but there was some turnover. The other reason was there keeps on being more and more privacy issues. But the way we were staffed, and even though we were cash flow positive, there were no reserves. There was no way as an industry association that we could get grants. And therefore, if new issues happened, we probably could not participate because it would risk the organization. And we learned that because we did do a trusted download program, and it did succeed in terms of it ended up paying for itself. But I was unable to invest in front of the opportunity, and I'm sure we lost momentum and market opportunity because of that. And so that was the board was very aware of how hard it was, the way we're staffed, and how hard it was, and that the fact that we succeeded, or didn't fail anyway, was somewhat of a miracle, which meant that as an organization, we could take no risks. As a nonprofit, we could take no risks.
I see.
And that's not really the road to impact.
As a for-profit, you can invest in new products, you can go after new markets, you can have what you have now, which is a certification program for smaller companies, $249 plus $50 a month, $49 a month. You have 3,400
plus affiliate relationships.
Plus affiliate relationships. Here's also what I see about revenue over the last few years. 06, 4.2 million. 07, 5.5 million. 08, 6 million. 09, last I heard, was expected to be 10 million, but I don't know if that's what you guys hit.
No, probably. 09 was a tough year.
Okay.
So that growth is not all that fabulous necessarily if you take a look at it compared to internet companies.
Right.
But remember that growth from 01 to 07 was completely organic.
And 01 was barely a million?
Oh, barely a million. Wow. Maybe a million. Maybe I usually take out the sponsorship dollars, so it was probably a million some. The sponsorship dollars went away with the dot-com bust, except for maybe, you know, Microsoft might have put something in.
What do you think about the whole Facebook privacy issue? What do you think of Facebook's privacy is what I mean.
You know, Facebook is so innovative and such an interesting company and is so such a profound company. I was going to say like Match.com, but I think Facebook even transcends that. And the whole point is to share some information. But we weren't surprised when Facebook had the issues with the recent updates. And, of course, we were there along with everybody else saying, this doesn't look too good and you guys have got to make some changes. And the good news is that they did.
Based on the changes they've made and what you know of them, would they get certified if they wanted to? If they wanted to be?
Well, they are certified.
Oh, they are? Facebook's certified?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So that's why we had a relationship with them going once that related to the changes that they made.
Were you certifying before the changes and you gave them pushback even though you were certifying?
And then they did the changes and then it's okay, are you guys going to work in good faith to address these issues? And the answer was yes. And so they remain certified. And right now I'd say that we're working on the next version of the privacy statement just to make sure everything's in alignment. But my team's point of view is Facebook's in a better place now with the new controls and disclosures and settings that they have now compared to where they were before April.
Here's something that I see a lot in articles about you guys, and it always feels like a pot shot, but because they end with this. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Like I have the San Francisco Business Times, I have the New York Times. They end with the controversy. They talk about the business, how it's growing, how you went for profit, how you're reaching other people, and then they say, pretty much, of course, it's also not clear how tough trustee standards are. It requires companies to disclose how they collect and use information about. Basically, if I were to continue reading this, what we would come out with is, how can you really be a watchdog of a company that is also your customer? So I'll turn that to you.
There's a number of different examples of companies that do that, auditing firms and security firms and all kinds of different places. And the criticism often is, oh, do they throw out enough people? The truth is we don't let everybody in. So at least 10 to, you know, it ranges 10 to 15% of companies don't make it through the initial certification, are not available for us for renewal. They do not want to make the changes that we ask them to make. And perhaps we don't see them again until they decide to get religion.
And then once they're in, is it hard to push someone out who's contributing revenue?
No, we've pushed out a lot of companies, sometimes across the ranges, and there's different ways of pushing them out. So sometimes it's a non-renewal. Sometimes it's we post this about, I think, Juicy Campus and Classic Closeouts. You know, these companies were not working in good faith. They were taking liberties with consumers' personal information, and they weren't working with us to resolve it. FreeiPods.com. So you know, we take the actions. Our philosophy is we're better helping the company stay compliant as long as they're trying to do it. I think it would have been a mistake, for example, for us to say, Facebook, that's a no-no, seals off, because then we would never come in and have an influence or be there to help them understand how their customers are interacting with things.
I see passion as I'm talking to you about Trustee. I see it when I read articles when I read articles about you, when I see you in videos about Trustee. But Dan Blank points something out from earlier. He says, it seems that when you joined, I think you used the word it's having a job, and when you were deciding where to go after Match.com, you were thinking about what's the better commute. How much of your business, of the decisions of where you're going to go work, is based on the passion for the business and the product, and how much is it based on the job and the safety and is cold and calculating, or not cold and calculating, but calculating?
You know, I think it would depend on the year. So, you know, you're right. 1994, when I went to Match, I was probably giving up a cushy job to do something risky, and I felt that I could do that. I guess after Match, I decided I wanted to go a little safer. Blue Light was kind of fun and was a blast. It's interesting. And I think I stayed with Trustee and probably did take it just as a job for the first couple of years. And then this privacy stuff is important. Trust is really important as a marketer. I have always understood the importance of trust in the relationship to brand. So it ceased being just a job. I wouldn't have been here, and now it's going to be 9 years, if it was just a job. It was very important for me to change it in 2008, for me personally, but more important, there was no way. If I had walked away and I was, you know, seriously considering it, because I wasn't sure I could get the board to allow me to go raise the money. Part of my sadness about making that decision was that I didn't think Trustee would make it. And I felt that that would be a waste of a really good brand. And ultimately the board decided, I think because they knew I'd probably leave, certainly was one factor. And they knew that I needed the talent and the money and the engineering to make things happen, that I was able to stay and make this more. This privacy stuff is amazing. And it's nuanced, and it's emotional, and it's important, and we're all dealing with it right now.
Now, do you have shares in the new Trustee?
Of course.
You do. All right. So now
the old Trustee, nobody had anything.
Nobody did. How does that contribute to the passion? I would imagine that would add a lot.
Oh, yes, but I don't think anybody would tell me I was less passionate about the business when I didn't own any.
Okay.
I was probably frustrated more. And it was about, you know, and I'll tell you, all the employees at Trustee now, and including the, you know, probably close to 24 who were with the Trustee as a nonprofit and 2 years later Trustee as a for-profit, they all have shares. But if you ask them what, you know, the people who certify websites or people in sales, what are they most excited about? Sure, they might mention the shares. What they're really excited about is that they have tools now to do their job better. And that really makes them excited.
We can see the business is growing. The number of sites that you're working with is growing. The reputation is growing. Well, thank you for doing this interview. I'm really glad that I got to meet you. You brought it up a couple of times, but I didn't get to go into the interview. I didn't get to go into Blue Light. And I was fascinated by what Blue Light did back when they offered that ISP service.
Yeah, that was fun, did. Huh? Right. Your research is great.
Oh, thank you.
Wow.
Thanks.
Send it to me. You might have more than I have.
Yeah, I did spend quite amount of time going over it. And you know what was interesting, too, is just seeing how the world evolved over those years that you've been out there in business, to see that there was one perception of the internet back when you started with Match.com, to see it change back when you joined Trustee. The world was in a doldrums. To hear stories about GeoCities back from when you joined but that was a big company back then. And
of course, yeah. So no, it's been a fascinating career. My kids, I think, have gotten a lot out of it. And clearly, you know, regardless of what happened in the Match, I know I get a little tied up about that. Nobody can take that away, you know? So it was fabulous.
Yeah, right on. It's a reputation builder.
Right, exactly.
All right.
So, we kind of...
I will say this. Stay on with me. I'll quickly say thank you to you on camera. And actually, I'll ask you, where can people find you? How can they connect with you if they want to stay in touch after this?
Sure, fran@trustee.com.
Okay.
One E.
fran@trustee.com. Guys, thank you all for watching. I'm Andrew. I'll see you on the website.